Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today's Friday, and this is the day we do Mythbusters, and our co-host is Chris Rossini. Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. Great to be with you.
I understand we're going to be dealing with an issue that's very, very dangerous. We may be flagged as being subversive, so we have to be very cautious in our language. And I understand that we're going to be discussing secession.
Yes, it's a very stigmatized idea, but we're going to go after it. And we had some help this week from the EU president, Jean-Claude Juncker. He actually came out and threatened our president, saying that if President Trump doesn't change his tune on Brexit or the EU, that Juncker may campaign to push for Ohio and Texas to secede from the United States. Now, Dr. Paul, you're a Texan. What's your initial reaction to that?
Well, I never dreamed that Texas would be a close ally with the EU president. I mean, this is wonderful if he's going to bat. But, you know, I don't think Texas is quite ready. I don't think we're on the verge of secession, but we're on the verge of a very serious debate about what secession is all about. And I think there is so much misunderstanding about what secession is, because that's just a breaking up of government when it gets too big. Our founders certainly thought the British Empire was too big and liberties were being, abused here in this country. And so they sought out support for secession. And people, in the past, and we make fun, but there have been people in the past, maybe hopefully not as much now, that if you even talk this way, you are a racist and something like this. But what about the secession of the people in Eastern Europe? How many countries broke away from the Soviet Union? I thought that was a great secession. And this is something that, of course, libertarians would always argue with. And theoretically, the perfect secession is all the way back down to the individual, because we believe in the sovereignty of the individual, which is theoretical because we're not likely to arrive there. It's a goal that is worth trying to explain, that if every individual had responsibility for oneself, you know, the world would be a pretty safe place, especially if each individual refused to use aggression against his fellow man. Our big problem is that governments are always using aggression against us, and they assume government are privileged in using aggression. So this is this to me is an important issue. Certainly it was an issue that practically tore our country apart and did for many years, and that was during the war between the states, where the southern states believed that they had a right to. And they had history behind them because, the founders always assumed if you're coming together voluntarily, you could voluntarily leave when you want. The unfortunate part was that they didn't put it in explicitly, in the Constitution. But very early on, there were talks about it. You know, in the earliest history, the first who said that we ought to secede was New England because they didn't like to be aligned with the South. And so it was not like they were doing something strange that people argued with them, but for different reasons, not on the principle. And even today, not only do we have the EU on our side arguing for the breakup and the secession of Texas, we have California leading the way, and they're not exactly a libertarian state. But, but the principle would be good, if we could follow through on this principle. Just having the right to do it would send a powerful message. So if the right is identified there, those on the far left in California may have their ways, and those who are more oriented to free markets and sound money in Texas could have their way. So secession, is a great idea. It's just a shame that people look negatively on it. And unfortunately, in the last 100 years, the move has been, although it's been existing even before that, but in the last century, especially since World War I with a progressive era, is that we need one world government. And George H.W. Bush actually said, we need the new world order. And it's out on the table. And the United Nations is with us. The League of Nations didn't succeed. But the United Nations, now they can tell us what to do and when to go to war. But the fortunate thing for our side of the argument is it never works. It's totally dysfunctional. It doesn't work economically, and it doesn't work culturally when you use force to try to get people to do something. And that's why we're in the midst of a crisis. But this is the proper debate. Do states and smaller units of government have a right to leave? And they should have the right to leave. And big government is not the source of liberty. Big government is usually held together by force, and then the people who want power and the people who want money usually end up with the control, and it usually destroys the middle class, leading to revolt. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing revolt in this country. We're seeing revolt in Europe, and it's called a populist movement. They've been fed up with government. The biggest chore we have as libertarians is present the alternative to the system we have today, because the system is crumbling, and it gives us an awfully good opportunity to present the case for liberty and small units of government.
Yes. Now, every government, they love to see themselves as the permanent one. They're the chosen ones, and they're going to be around forever. But any quick look at history shows that that's not even close to being the case. Empires come and go. Unions of states, they come and go. They'll stay together while things are good. But once things turn economically, everybody races for the exits. So being that that's the history of governments going all the way back, Dr. Paul, shouldn't we expect that there will be secession ultimately at some point in the United States?
Absolutely, and that's the way it's happened. It's always predictable, and some of the intolerant empires lasted longer than they should have, but they usually come down. They usually overextend themselves in foreign adventurism, and also extend themselves in saying, well, we can pay for all the bills of welfare and warfare with an artificial monetary system, the fiat system, and that's ancient history too. So yes, they always self-destruct. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. One of the way to sort of describe this need for the disintegration of a huge empire is the same thing in economics. You know, when things get out of hand, there's too much debt, and people have been misled by artificially low interest rates. There's a lot of bad mistakes made, and we call it malinvestment. So nothing happens. Real growth doesn't come back until you have the liquidation, the cleansing of this, which conventional wisdom of the last 50, 60 years is not to allow, you know, the correction to occur. It's happening. It has been happening for decades now in Japan, and it's happening here. And I think this is a symbolic of a political liquidation. It's political power, and the power gets out of hands. It destroys individual liberty, which has driven mankind, a desire for liberty, over a long period of time. And there's always this justification: sacrifice a little bit of liberty for a government that will take care of us. But then when they get out of hand, they have to be liquidated, and that's what is ongoing. But the liquidation could be easy. It doesn't have to be violent. It doesn't have to be like our civil war. We should just admit it and go back to smaller government. And if that were permitted, then I think that it would be much easier to move in the direction of less government. Less government means more freedom for the individual. The bigger the government, the less freedom there is. So big government empires is a direct threat to individual liberty. So if one is inclined to believe it would be nice to have individual liberty, they should learn to reject the notion that there is a need to sacrifice liberty in order to enhance government to take care of us or police the world or have a strong military to start attacking phantoms that are about to attack us and be lulled into believing that the powerful special interests who may be wanting to control the financial system or control world resources like oil, if they are led in to believe that, then this leads to trouble. But the need for that exists today for the liquidation of political power, I think, is just great. We have to help guide it to something very, very positive and preach the gospel of nonviolence, because I do not believe it's necessary to, but unfortunately, too often it leads to this violence that means that people have to make a major decision. But if people would accept the non-aggression principle, believe me, these problems could be solved in a peaceful manner.
Let's shift over to the EU for a second, because that's the EU president does not like that Trump has been a cheerleader for Brexit. But the EU was flawed from the very beginning. But that never stopped the politicians from pushing for it. And for decade after decade, they did push for it. And now here we are. So, Dr. Paul, please talk about how this project that they've concocted was always destined to fail and why Brexit is actually a very good thing.
You know, it has been going on for many decades now to unify Europe, and the main goal was to have the European nations quit fighting among themselves. And I think the motivation was fine, but the method was so bad. It was a political answer to a social type of problem. In a way, they faced a bit of a crisis that we faced when the states were very independent, printing their own money and restricting trade among the states. And that was one of the reasons there were people who believed that we should, have changes there, but not to unify the government to a monolith. And Europeans, they were looking to that. They wanted more open borders, more free movement, which is not automatically bad. And they were looking for a unified currency. But it wasn't a market currency. It was still a political currency. Then they had a political European government. Then they had political regulations that finally turned the British off. They were a little bit more independent than the average country on the mainland of Europe. And they got turned off and said, these regulations are ridiculous. And fortunately, they had an available, and it was recognized that they could leave. And they're going through this process. And I think that is wonderful. And it's just too bad that that wasn't put into our Constitution. There was a method where people could leave. Just the threat of being able to leave would tone down the aggressiveness of a central government. And that is what, nullification was all about. People did understand and believe in nullification of federal laws if the states didn't accept it. But no, I think it was doomed to fail at the beginning because it became a political force. And I remember very clearly as it was coming together, my first reaction to it was, I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the finances won't work, and the small countries are going to suffer. Then I kept thinking, there have been thousands of years of history. I'm just wondering, are the Germans going to get along with the British? Are the French going to get along with the Italians? Are the Spanish going to get along with, the various countries? And I just thought that socially and culturally it wouldn't work if it's pushed on them. That's why the libertarian approach of gracefully encouraging people to trade and encouraging the countries to have an agreement, like it's happened before without a one world government, that gold was money and people had to tie their currency to gold. It was never a perfect gold standard, but it's a goal worth seeking because a perfect fiat standard only means you have to have a tyrant to run it, and the tyrant can be, world government, and that is what has happened. And it has introduced, the absolute problems that they're facing today with this artificial force on the migration problems. The chaos that we and others have created in the Middle East, at the same time saying that those who are the cultural Marxists say what we really want is one world government because they believe that the elite have to take care of everybody. So the chaos is what they're looking for. So they open up the doors. They create a welfare state that adds insult to injury. It impoverishes the nations. And then you have the poorer nations like Greece and Spain. They get really hit hard. And then it causes more conflict. That's why the only thing that can save Europe right now is a lot more countries acting like the British have and just leave the European Union. There is a chance, and there's no reason you can't leave and have some type of an agreement of an association. But right now it's in flux and it's very dangerous. But the one thing they ought to recognize is the European Union cannot work under today's circumstances. And I could say that's essentially true about what's happening in our country today, because right now, if you take a look at what some of the states are doing, they're talking about enforcing the Constitution on using only gold and silver. The states are instructed, only gold and silver as legal tender. They're sick and tired of the federal law enforcement people coming in and say, we're going to put everybody in jail if they smoke a marijuana cigarette, and they're sort of nullifying that. So there's a lot to look at today that's happening. It's very positive, but the most important thing, are we as defenders of and promoters of individual liberty, are we in a position to affect the changes that will come and are necessary?
Finally, Dr. Paul, let's look at the big picture outside of European Union, United States, and that is globalism, political globalism in general. And especially over the last 100 years, there's been a persistent push for a world government that will manage everything and everyone. And the total surveillance of all of us is a part of that because they want to manage us. And there's been a constant push for consolidation of power and loss of national sovereignty. So, Dr. Paul, please finish the show by giving us the case for individual liberty, private property, and the decentralization of power, and why it would be so much more superior than this globalist utopia.
Yes, and if we clarify the words, and semantics are important, what you described is the answer. But if you use the word globalism, for most of us now, that's very negative. But it is a globalist approach for voluntarism. You know, let people travel as much as conceivable. Let trade flourish as much as conceivable. Let no one nation be aggressive against another nation. Encourage people to use a sound currency. And that would have it would be globalistic, but it wouldn't be global government. And I mentioned that about it's the power of global government using force that is the big danger. And that's when you invite the tyrants to come in, because they believe in it, and they believe that the elite, the George Soros of the world, they believe they're elite and they understand it better, and therefore they must have control. I really like the last paragraph in the Declaration of Independence, because I think they were very clear on what they were looking for, and it was a different goal than actually that came out of the Constitution. And the thing that they mentioned in the last paragraph three times is they were fighting and declaring this independence because they believed, and they used for they as for the colonies. It was they. It wasn't it. They believed in free and independent states, and that's mentioned three times, independent states. And yet they weren't thinking that they were going to be fighting. They were doing this together. They were fighting for their liberty together, and they were coming together. But they wanted to be free in independent states. Well, as time went on, there's nothing independent about the states. And as I said a few minutes ago, there is a striving for it. It's available to us, but it won't be changed by a technicality of the interpretation of the Constitution. It will only be changed with the determination of the people to understand why liberty is dependent on small government. And that doesn't mean that there'll be perfect people running small government. You know, we know our city council and county governments and state governments can do harm too, but it's so limited compared to what happens when a state government or the federal government gets involved, or a collusion of states like the European Union or NAFTA get together. But what about a world government that is so risky? If men were perfect and you found the perfect manager, yeah, put him in charge. But that doesn't happen. It's not going to happen, and it would invite trouble. So There is a necessary need, there's a definite need for us to present the case for what a libertarian society would be like, because I mention this so often in my speeches about different groups, liberals and progressives and populists and all. If you understand liberty, it's not a threat to anybody because it brings people together. If you're not going to commit harm to somebody else, we're not going to touch you. So that's tolerance toward religion, tolerance towards personal attitudes, tolerance on all that we do in our property. And that is a tolerance that you have. And all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, I am a liberal and I am a progressive and I believe in these things. And I don't, now if I reject the notion that I can force other people to act like I do, then it doesn't work. But there's no reason why somebody might use their liberties differently than another. You pick your own religion. You might pick your lifestyle. You might pick your habits. You might pick your eating habits, your smoking habits, and whatever, and your entertainment habits. And all of a sudden, people who act one way and differently, and that's the way it would be with countries. Countries would be different, and individuals would be different, but the key to it is the principle of liberty, where people are sovereign individuals, and the government that will be around for a while should be as close to home as possible. Under those conditions, and I think they're possible, there's reason for it to be optimistic, because there's a better understanding of this message today than there has ever been before, because it's always been big government, big government, big government tyrants, and we have to take care of the people who won't take care of themselves. And that's why the cultural Marxists are such a threat to liberty, because they believe that they must do it. That is part of their philosophy, and that explains the reason why very rich people, you think, well, why are they arguing this thing for like socialism and Marxism? Well, it's social Marxism, and they want to control the people, and they want to divide up the loot on their own, and that is why they're such a threat to individual liberty. Chris, I want to thank you very much for being with us today on this important program dealing with secession. Chris?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Paul.
Well, very good. And I want to thank the viewers today for tuning in to our program. Please come back soon.